Hello, grandkids, and welcome to Stunt Granny Audio Presents OPA number 118. This is Kevin DeFrango. Sitting to my left is Ken Phillips. What is happening, good sir?
Hey, man, we're just back together here at the bedroom studio recording another great episode. Good to be back together.
You know, I think we gave a shout out, and we usually do the beer thing at the end, but I did not realize how convenient until tonight the actual brewing company is between our two locations. Like, it's not even really, it's out of the way just because it's not directly on the path, but it is like maybe two blocks out of the way.
Yeah, it's a...
which is a very minor detour.
Local brewer just off of James Road here in Columbus. And it is quite convenient to stop by there in a little industrial park, I guess you call it there.
Yeah, even if they don't have anything special on tap at the time, I would be more than happy to always make that my stop if you say you are out of beer.
You can usually find some interesting people in there as well while you're stopping in.
I have had quite a good time the last couple of times I've been in there. This one, the woman did seem like she was, you know, maybe had a couple of her own beverages. Mm. She was encouraging me to get the Magnon IPA. But I ended up going a different route there because it was their... Oh, and I'm trying to remember the name now because it was it's their red ale.
I was wondering what this was because it was a darker brew for sure.
Yeah, I'm going to need to look it up here because I feel like it started with a K. So I'll look it up here in a moment.
We're going to get to you this the name of this beer here shortly, folks. In other news, I'm not sure. I guess the Steelers, I guess the running back might be coming back now, Kevin, perhaps? Question mark? That's what it looks like.
Chaka, the Red Lager.
Oh, Chaka Red Lager. Lager. Yeah. Lager. No, Lager.
Lager.
Red Lager, okay. Yeah. It's sort of like a Killian's-ish.
Yeah, it is definitely in the Killian's area. I do like their Resistor, which is their Irish Red that they make around this St. Patrick's Day. And this one's similar. I mean, it's just instead of being an ale, it's a lager. So the yeasts are different and they ferment at about a 10 degree different temperature. The lagers being the cooler of the two.
Interesting. And ales is the more traditional, would you say?
I don't know if it's traditional because, I mean, like, Budweiser is a lager. Like, a lot of the famous beers are lagers.
Right.
But, yeah, I mean, there are more variety. There are more beers available in the ale family than there are in the lager family.
Worldwide?
Yeah, I would just say, like, type-wise, there are more ales than lagers.
All right. That goes to prove that old saying, type-wise, there are more ales than lagers. it's been confirmed.
Yeah, there are a lot of analogs, I guess, between the two, though, too. Also, yeah. Like, I mean, you can almost reproduce some of the same stuff, but just
with
a different yeast strain.
Probably someone has tried to reproduce this at some point, but I know that they used to have something that they... was basically the equivalent to beer in ancient Egypt. And I wonder if anyone's ever tried to recreate that at any point or try to see what that actually would have been like.
To brew or taste. We know what mead would have tasted somewhat like at this juncture.
Yeah, there's a long history of fermented beer-like beverages, Kevin. And we're proud to carry on that tradition today.
Ken, there's another tradition that we could be carrying on right now, Ken.
Oh, you don't say, Kevin.
We could start making brooms as they were made in ye old good days, well, by hand.
You know, that's I think we kind of accidentally stumbled into this transition, but I think that's a very good kind of line to draw between the type of like artisanal brooms that we're going to be discussing here in this topic, and kind of the recent boom in recent-ish boom in local you know, brews and microbrewery.
Yeah,
it's a similar kind of idea, I think, to kind of like take over that process and actually like this is actually like handmade by somebody in a way.
Yeah, because when I honestly, when I saw the headline, this was one where artisanal brooms exist and they can cost $350. You know, I've got to admit, it made my blood boil a little bit when I saw the headline.
Well, I feel
but
like
after they're... reading the article, I feel differently. Like, that was almost, to me, that was a choice to help draw you in.
The headline? Oh, yeah.
Yeah, because...
we could have a little headline corner here. we like to discuss these headlines every so often.
Yeah, I mean, this is a double dip article. I mean, we could go into the headline aspect of it here. But
They're definitely trying to get your goose there with the... putting that right up there about the $350 brooms, just without any context, is, you know, going to, I think, give you kind of a knee-jerk reaction to being like, who in the hell is going to buy a $350 broom except some kind of freaking...
yeah, someone who has entirely too much money.
Right, yeah.
And I think the more that I've sat on this, I'm just like, man, the brooms that I always buy for 10 bucks... they end up sucking in like 12 months.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I'm like, maybe this isn't such a bad idea. Because they were talking, and it is something that people bemoan at certain junctures, like definitely with appliances to me, that, oh, it's not like the good old days. They don't last that long.
Right.
And this is one of those things where, yeah, even with something like a broom, I guess I'm not surprised if you make it well, and make it more expensive, obviously, mm-hmm. that it's going to last a little bit longer. Like, I don't think it's always true that, you know, more expensive equals longer lasting, but
right.
I would have to say that there's a general trend that, you know, you're paying for a little bit of quality more times than not when you pay for something that's more expensive. Well, then, I mean, even to go back to the beer, like I think that
you might pay more to get from a, you know, a small batch kind of brewer versus going to buying a Budweiser. You know, you might pay more for the artisanal version of beer. Now, you probably I think I've ever heard of someone paying $350 for a beer, but then again, a broom is not something you consume, so it's gonna stick around, right? That's the idea.
And that was the other thing that, and I'm trying to check the number, because they were talking about it lasting a couple of decades. And, like, I know that I'm gonna go through a couple of $10 brooms. Like, I can picture the ones that we have at home, and I can already see, like, some of the strands are all out of whack already.
Right.
You know, it works, but I wonder how nice a broom like this would sweep if we had it.
Well, we did watch a video in addition to this.
Yes.
Dealing with, we really kind of deep dive on this broom subject here. We watched a video on YouTube about a broom maker, or a, what did they call them here? A broom? I don't know.
The video is called The Broom Maker. Yeah. So, I mean, if they wanted some other name, they should have made it the title, Ken.
Yeah, they really dropped the ball there if there was a technical name that they could have went with instead of broom maker.
Yeah, but they did do a good job in the video. of kind of describing the process and actually explaining of all funny things, but all the and I'm not surprised though, the evolution of the broom.
Yes. Well, or lack thereof
Like,
as well. Yes. I mean, there was at least one innovation that the broom maker was able to point out, that brooms originally were just round, kind of like straw. Well, not straw, I guess. It's like a kind of broom corn is what it's
oh,
sorghum, I think.
sorghum, yeah.
So they would wrap that around like a stick in the early days. And it would just be a round broom. But
Right.
then the Quakers, no, the Shakers actually,
Yes, shakers.
different group, the Quakers and the Shakers, it seems like they really,
And they were both in Pennsylvania, though,
yeah,
so I mean.
they, and I think there was actually a Shaker church not far from my house actually on that road that goes by the Logan Elementary there.
Oh, yeah.
So I remember hearing that, and I kind of, whenever I go by, I would sort of like want to see and look in the window to see if they
If
were in there, kind of
they were
shaking
sacrificing a
around or
goat or
something.
something.
Yeah, but yeah, they may have been making brooms for all I know, because apparently they innovated that in this country. And that's a Pennsylvania topic in a way there, Kevin, isn't it?
Yeah, it
If we
is.
think that they were in the Pennsylvania area, maybe.
He did not say specifically it was the Pennsylvania Shakers,
Yeah.
but I will say that there were Shakers there pretty early on, so it could have been them. They decided to go from making it round to making it more of a flat surface.
Flattening out that broom, get more surface area. You're
Yeah.
gonna be able to
Cover a little more area.
broom a little more stuff. Yeah, exactly. And I like brooming myself, Kevin. I guess I should come out in full disclosure. I think it's kind of relaxing in a way, or
Oh.
I don't know, something about seeing the dirt kind of like all pile up in one pile, and knowing that the rest of the floor is that much cleaner. It just kind of gives you a little kind of natural satisfaction, I think.
There's definitely a difference having wood floors as opposed I had a majority carpet in the condo. The sweeping has taken on a new life in the hardwood era here.
Gotcha. Yes, that
Maybe
is
a
a
little
big.
bit easier to a little bit harder to use a vacuum cleaner on the hardwood.
It's friendly for the sweeper that sweeping though. Yeah.
Yeah, it is it seems a little bit easier to do the sweeping on it. So that was the other reason why something again to go back to these artisanal brooms. There is something a little more appealing. Like I know that we're going to be there for a long time, and we have a lot of hardwood floors.
Yeah.
You know, it's definitely an influencer.
So the downside though is, I think some of the pictures in this article that they have, some of the brooms that are pictured in this article actually don't seem particularly practical to me. Now that video that we watched, like those were definitely very practical brooms. Like these look like practical brooms that we're seeing here. But that's fine. Yeah.
Yeah, I think it was just the one in the because that was
That one I'm not crazy about. This one with the skirt on
well
it, like that's not gonna, how long is that gonna last?
oh I kind of like the look of the skirt, I've got to admit.
Right, well, this is the kind of hard-hitting disagreements that hot takes that we're gonna bring here.
Plus,
Broom skirt versus no.
I really maybe I'm just
Oh,
being
and there's a
influenced.
did you notice the sheath on this broom though?
Oh yeah.
Now, do you think that's overkill or?
It was. It's probably gonna get dirty really quick. Like I do think that wood has a way of just kind of soaking in some grime over time that kind of has a nice look to it. That any type of cover over it would cause a problem. I can see covering up maybe to minimize dust on your broom.
But then your dust is just going to get on the cloth, though, instead, probably. I'm not sure. I'm skeptical, Kevin. This is
I do like the person's fireplace.
Yeah, that seems cool.
And very, I like the very nice.
I like the actual bristles on the broom. And that's one thing I noticed on the broom as well that the craftsman broom maker was making on that video, that the bristles seemed like to spread really nicely and kind of work together very nicely. Like you said, some of those like blue plastic brooms, it doesn't really work that way as well. And the kind of like spreads can get knocked around, you know. A nice broom like that, you're going to be able to like have a nice, clean, neat pile of dust when you're done, Kevin.
Yeah. I mean, again, the more I think about this, the more, again, not going for the $350 broom.
I think that's crazy.
Personally. I think if they're talking 70 bucks, I can swing 70 bucks, I think. Again, especially knowing that I'm going to get a lot of use out of it.
Yeah, I think if it lasts, you know, for a couple years, you're probably going to end up at least breaking even compared to like buying a sequence of inferior brooms. And also think of the waste you're saving by not having to, you know,
well,
throw those brooms away.
And that is the other thing about, you know, when you kind of talk a quality versus quantity situation, a lot of times when you build something that is nicer, you don't, you know, get rid of it as quickly. So it's kind of nice that you do hold on to something for a long time rather than pitching it in a few years.
Yeah, I think that's the way to go, especially when there's so much other stuff that kind of by its nature has to be replaced very quickly, like as technology improves, like the other, the older versions of things, like your old computers or iPhones, you have to replace.
Yeah, I am finding out that this version of computer is getting to be old.
Yeah.
7 years is kind of old.
Yeah, that's pretty old. Unfortunately.
So that is going to be something that might be looked into for the stunt granny future.
But when it comes to brooms, like we said, there really hasn't been, beyond the shaker evolution there, there hasn't been any changes in technology for hundreds of years, so...
Yeah, and really, even the plastic brooms are working on the exact same kind of principle as these handmade ones. It's just that, yeah, everything's just made cheaper, which is why it's cheaper.
Right. But sometimes you get what you pay for, Kevin.
Yep.
And maybe we shouldn't scoff that people are spending a ton of money on brooms.
Well, yeah, and I wasn't really surprised either that... they were talking about just, and I think this is a very true statement. It is a known fact in the world of consumer products that if a thing exists, a wildly expensive version of that thing exists too.
Talking about a $1,600 pen $125,000 gold barbells. That's pretty... ridiculous.
Yeah, $250 rabbit pillow,
or $400 glass vases, $220 cooking pots. So yeah, it depends to me what if you're going to use it as a broom and you're going to get your money's worth out of it. I think that's actually pretty smart. But if it's just like something that.
And most of the people that they talked to, both in this article and the guy in the video, he wants you to use it.
Mm-hmm.
He does not want this thing to be standing on a wall somewhere. He wants you to sweep with it, man.
Right. I think that is what is kind of what a broom maker would want, Kevin. To actually, a broom squire. That's it.
Broom squire.
I knew I'd find it. That's what a broom squire would want, Kevin.
Oh, Ken. Well, I am not sure if the word squire was in vogue in the 70s.
The 1970s?
The 1970s. I do not think so.
No. There was a different magazine called Esquire, though. But I think that's unrelated.
Yeah, that is unrelated. You can't win them all, Ken, as far as smooth transitions. Nope. But you can keep on going ahead since you mentioned that. This article that I ran across on Vice.com, which was from Vice Australia originally, was about a woman's diet in the 70s, that was published in Vogue magazine.
Right.
And I brought this up to my wife. The plan is for wine and eggs. It's a 3-day diet, and you're supposed to lose 5 pounds.
Yeah, wine, eggs, and coffee, black coffee, doesn't seem like a great diet to me on paper.
Yeah.
When I first started reading this article, it didn't look good.
I read this diet off to my wife, and she was very interested when I told her what the breakfast was. Which is 1 egg hard boiled, 1 glass white wine, dry, preferably Chablis.
Helpful.
The woman in the article trying to recreate this diet did not choose Chablis because it is evidently very expensive.
Like $80 a bottle or around there? Yeah.
Yeah. And after that, you get some black coffee.
Mmm. That to me
that
does
is
not go
breakfast.
With, that to me does not go with wine. I gotta say,
I guess you finish your wine and then you just like it's a coffee chaser. I hope you're not drinking them at the same time.
Double fisting.
Yeah, it'd be kind of that would be weird. I mean, I don't think succeeding one after the other is an ideal situation. But, don't drink don't be a barbarian and drink both of them at the same time.
No. I mean, it's already bad enough that you're following this diet. Don't make it worse.
Oh, yeah. So, lunch is 2 eggs, hard-boiled is best, but poached if necessary.
So now this is just in case we're following along. That was 3 eggs total by this point.
Yeah, that's breakfast and lunch is 3 eggs.
And that is the
solid food.
That is all the solid food. Yeah, okay.
2 glasses of white wine.
For lunch.
And more black coffee.
Yeah, followed up with black coffee.
Which is another thing. I don't know too many people that go straight black on their coffee.
Well,
I know people that use less, additives than others. Are you a black coffee man?
I am a black coffee person, but it does
God
surprise
bless
people.
You.
Yes. I guess I'm a traditionalist in that way, Kevin.
Yep, I'm a traditional drink water in the morning kind of a guy.
Yeah, I've definitely had to also drink water in the morning, so that's become part of my tradition as well. But I don't know. Black coffee's not bad. I can't see myself doing this. Well, maybe we should continue on, Kevin, and say what dinner is.
Well,
on this
diet.
Well,
this is for the ladies, Ken. This is not for us. This is not for a man.
True. This was specifically packaged as a diet for...
It was by a woman for the women.
Yes. And the intention behind it was to lose 5 pounds in 3 days, I believe.
Yeah, and it sounds very possible to do so. Because for dinner, you're still not getting a lot of food. It's 5 ounces of steak grilled with black pepper, lemon juice. Then the remainder of the white wine. 1 bottle allowed per day.
split between three meals, breakfast, lunch, and dinner.
And more black coffee, just in case. Yeah, black coffee
for dinner, too. Interesting.
Wow. You are... I guess it is not a surprise that not eating and ingesting large quantities of liquid would help you lose weight.
Well, the not eating part, too. It's going to make it hard to gain weight unless you're just like chugging fruit juice or something.
Just chugging smoothies, smoothie after smoothie.
Just downing hummingbird food. But no, this is, you know what though? I got to say, part of me actually thought that this diet was going to perversely end up like working out. You know, well, like, and being one of those things that are like, you're not going to believe this, but this actually did the trick, and I felt great after trying this diet, you know?
Well, I would say it went 50-50, Ken. She lost the weight.
No, but by no means was this... you know, I expected there to be... You know,
yeah, this was a full, you're thinking full on success.
Right, yes.
Yeah, and this was not a full on success.
No.
When everyone around you is worried for your health on the third day. And I mean, I guess that is the other thing about this. I mean, this would be, to me, definitely what you call a crash diet. Like, you just need to lose a bunch of weight real quick.
I guess if you're a wrestler, maybe. I don't know. I can't think of a good reason that you would need to do that. But this was, yeah, like we said, specifically for women. And this, the author, the writer of this article who went through the diet, she had some quotes from the author of the diet herself, the original author of the diet. Saying things like, men who like plump girls, quote unquote, aren't sure of their masculinity, and therefore, yes, emaciated skeletons would make him feel like more of a man. Fabulous. So, that's the, you know, sort of weird attitude, I guess, that is coming through in this, the book and diet.
The woman's attitude in that that time frame was maybe not the best.
Yeah, I would say so. Like, it is always interesting because no matter how you split up humans, you know, men and women, you can say that the men are in a lot of trouble these days, right? But it's not like, you know. The women are all perfect either, I suppose, Kevin. That's sometimes the attitude that is seen, but
right.
There's definitely trouble. Any person, regardless of who they are, is capable of doing something that is mind-bogglingly stupid. Yes, such as promoting this this kind of diet.
Just, it was funny that the woman that did this did seem to feel like the wine in the morning helped give her energy.
Yeah. I'm not sure how that works.
But I was also not surprised that the afternoon wine really brought her down.
Yeah, you know, I think I've had beer for lunch once or twice. And, well, not for, but with lunch. A few times, like, it's not really been a great time anytime that I've done it.
See, I do not have a problem with that. We do that from time to time. I don't really have a problem. I usually do tend to, lean towards a lower ABV beer. I don't try, to, you know, amp things up if I don't need to. Because that is one thing that you're going to feel a little bit more with the higher percentage of alcohol.
Yeah.
So, but it, this is another thing. Like, you're, if wine is 13% pretty consistently. Like, it might be 12 to 14.
Right.
But 13 is pretty typical.
And going with two glasses, it's probably not helping anything either.
Oof, no. No, not even a little bit.
And I gotta say that the pictures that she took, and this could have helped, not have helped anything, but the pictures of the eggs that she took, they don't look particularly appetizing to me. Like, maybe they were cooked in a microwave or something.
It's, to me, it's one of those things that I understood why she got tired of eggs.
Right.
Like, I like eggs. I have a lot of egg for breakfast. Pretty much every day of the week. Different types. I do have some hard boileds every now and again.
You ever go for a frittata, Kevin?
Frittatas. Pretty tasty.
Yeah, those are real good.
But she was not allowed to have a frittata.
No, no frittatas.
And she did not take advantage of the poached option at all.
No. All hard boiled. And I believe, I'm going to go out on a limb, Kevin, and say microwaved hard boiled or something, because I just don't like the way that those egg yolks look.
She probably did not cook them quite enough, it looks like. I would say that she had a little improper technique on that. At least judging from the pictures, it looks a little soft in the middle.
That's not going to help anything.
No,
not that. If you perfectly cooked them, I don't think it still would be a great diet, Kevin.
No, because I agree with her. Like, there's that point with some things, and eggs are one of them. Like, I can only do so many. Like, as much as I like deviled eggs, like, there's a point where I'm like, okay, I'm cool, man.
Right. Like, they taste good, yeah, but I don't want any more, thank you. Yeah. Eggs will do that, for sure.
So, and I think there are some other foods other than eggs that do that for me, but that one definitely sticks out to me. It's just like, okay, we're cool. So having to do this three consecutive days and pretty much only having egg.
Yeah, the steak at night too. That feels weird to me, like just hitting like a mostly empty stomach. Just kind of like churning in there.
And 5 ounces is not too much. Like, because right. Can't you get sometimes like a 5 ounce filet mignon?
Yeah, I feel like they're only like 6 ounces.
Or maybe six.
Right.
6 to 8, maybe. But yeah, I mean, it's a pretty small portion to be eating. And then not to have any vegetables. There is no grains whatsoever to speak of in this diet.
No. No. No.
There is no starch.
No, like you said, no vegetable matter, really.
Yeah, I mean, not having a starch will help your metabolism.
Unless you count coffee from the beans as being some kind of, I don't think that counts, Kevin.
No. No, considering it's going to come out of your system pretty much as soon as it goes in. Yeah, I'm not counting it on my books.
All right, well, you heard it here. This diet does not include any vegetable matter.
So this, I can understand why this diet would wear on you.
But the reason I thought it would be good is because there has been some crazy diets that people have sworn by. You know, the Atkins diet maybe turned out not to be the most healthy thing. There's like the keto diet now, which is pretty similar to that, I think. The paleo diet,
Yeah.
You got the
gluten-free
diet. Sure. Yeah. Oh, and there was this, her last name is Peterson. I don't know if you know who Jordan Peterson is.
The name sounds familiar, but I'm not completely.
His daughter came out with this diet where it's like you literally only eat steak. And it's actually pretty similar to this idea, really, except I guess there's
I'm going to guess no there's eggs. More than 5 ounces of steak involved, too.
Yeah, I think you can eat as much steak as you want. It's like steak and salt and pepper. water, and for some reason, alcohol is allowed on this diet. Well, at least she said that.
Sure.
Yeah, for whatever reason, that works for her. So
everyone likes alcohol on their diet, Ken. I mean, this one was just white wine.
Right. And I
am
not going to turn my nose up.
And that's the other thing about this diet that, to me, is not appealing at all. Not a white wine guy.
No, I'm not a fan myself of the white wine either.
I can cook with white wines.
Sure.
But drinking white wines on the regular, no, I'm good. I don't want to do that. Red wine, sign me up. I'm there.
Yeah, that's a more natural choice for me as well. Don't know what it is. It does kind of upset my stomach a little bit or something. Like, there's something about the tartness of a white wine normally. The dryness of it.
And there's a little too much sweetness.
Well, yeah, it depends on the white wine, too. Yeah.
And a lot of them that is not, like, is, I don't, my palate really doesn't like.
Mm-hmm. Yep, I know what you're talking about.
So yeah, that's another part of this diet. Again, it's not supposed to be for us men, Ken, but it does not seem appealing to me. And this woman did not seem like she liked white wines either.
No. I really feel like she kind of screwed herself a little bit here by doing this diet on a weekday, at least partially. That was not the intention of the diet, I don't think.
Yeah, and she even admitted kind of at the end of the article that she probably should have done it, you know, as the article called for.
Right. And also starting the diet in a hungover state is probably not a great idea either. So there's a couple things that I had.
Yeah, you probably want to go into this as healthy as possible so that when you wreck your body...
To even give yourself a fair chance at
a fighting chance to get through this thing.
Yes.
Oh, man. But yeah, I do not think it would be in me to recommend going with that diet.
Nope. I agree, Kevin.
You know what I could recommend, Ken?
Tell me.
Some dad jokes.
Uh-huh.
Because the more I read this article, the more maybe some of my groan-inducing jokes are actually dad jokes.
There you go.
Despite the fact that I do not have any children of my own, I believe that the cheesiness of some of my jokes in person might border on dad joke.
Kevin, if you have learned nothing else today, I think that I would be happy that you could learn that you don't have to be a dad to make dad jokes. That's a common misconception, I think. And actually, funnily enough, at my old job, everybody kind of had like a nickname for whatever reason. You know, just one of those things there.
Okay.
And my nickname was Dad Jokes. I am a dad, it's true. And for some reason, I've always loved dad jokes. I remember some of my peers definitely groaning and not being down with these jokes. But I never went through that period, Kevin. I always thought they were very funny. Now, some of the ones that they use as references in this article, actually, I was not that crazy about. It depends. You know, there's such a thing as bad dad jokes for sure. But
yeah, and I guess it's kind of funny. Like, my dad, not a dad joke kind of guy. He's not a joke kind of a guy.
Yeah, he's always a very serious fellow.
Blunt assessment to make you laugh, that will happen.
Gotcha.
Yeah, I never had to worry about the dad joke myself.
Now, let's see. Did you maybe have an uncle who was conversant with these kind of jokes?
I don't think... My grandfather was.
Mm.
My grandfather had a bunch of dad jokes.
So maybe he like turned all of his children off from actually making dad jokes since he was so prolific.
Well, that was my mom's side, since I never met my dad's father.
Well, then I guess maybe there's some different reason there, Kevin. But I was just checking about the uncles because it was interesting to me. I mean, this is a very wide-ranging article, I think, but one of the points was that this is actually a worldwide phenomenon. People in other cultures have a similar idea of these kind of like groan-inducing jokes being told by like the male figures in the family, you know, the dads or the, I think in Japan it was actually like, more of an uncle joke.
Yeah. Cause I'm trying to find that part. Oh yeah. Through intergenerational scorn runs through some other cultures near equivalents to the dad jokes. A linguistics anthropologist in South Korea observed Ajay Gago. These are jokes or gags, like a distant uncle or middle-aged man, which reminded me about the middle-aged men for rent, the Osan in Japan.
Right, yeah.
I wonder if the Osan in Japan have their own version of gags, I would imagine.
Yeah, this seems like in Japan they're actually more hated by the young people. And I guess that could sort of correlate with the idea of the older men running themselves out in order to gain some kind of respect in society. Nobody likes their jokes, apparently.
Yeah, find another line of work.
Yes, the definitions in Japan are an unfunny joke, an outdated joke, a joke one is forced to laugh at, and an unfunny play on words. Some of the examples I think was the time. I mean, people know what dad jokes are, of course, but like, what's the best time for a dentist appointment, Kevin?
2:30.
There you go. That's it. 2:30. That's to me a borderline for me. Like that, it's like somewhat clever. The one joke in here that I really did not care for at all was the round barn, where the father would always say, "Hey, did you hear about there's a guy that died in there?" Yeah. Because he couldn't find a corner to piss in. And to me, that joke just makes several assumptions that I don't agree with. Number one, that you really need a corner. Like, if you're going to piss in a barn, you might as well just go anywhere, I guess. You've made up your mind that you're going to pee indoors, like, to me, why do you need a
corner?
Why the corner? Go for it, sir.
And I've got to admit, there are times, once or twice, where I may have waited too long.
Mm.
Would you not just piss yourself at some point?
Besides, from, rather than dying. Yeah, and I'm not sure the actual death process, what would that be?
Yeah, like, how long do you have to hold your pee to die?
I guess your bladder could rupture, and then you would just, like, your body would, get your pee all mixed up in your blood. That's probably bad, right?
It does not sound good.
But even that would take a while to kill you.
Yeah, because your pee is still a lot of water. Like, there's some toxic stuff in there, but I would not think that would completely pollute your bloodstream that quickly.
It would be bad, I think. I'm going to put that in the bad category.
Well, yeah, I would put on the really shouldn't do this category.
Anyway, that joke... like I said, it's more, it raises too many questions for me. But my favorite, I think, of this genre would be, maybe, did you hear about, that, farmer? He's, outstanding in his field. To me, that's like on the Mount Rushmore of dad jokes.
Oh, man.
Or somehow working in that, you know, you went camping and it was intense. I like that one as well. So those would be definitely two of my favorites there.
Oh, yeah, I did kind of laugh, and I was not surprised that there is a Twitter account called @BadDadJokes. And there's even a dad joke Han Solo, which, again, there always seems that, you know, there's always a parody. The parody of Andrew Luck being a general in the Union Army. I think we've discussed this before.
Oh, I don't know if I've actually heard of this one.
Oh my gosh, it's hilarious. Like, the account always describes who the Colts' next opponent will be as if he was writing a letter during the Civil War. It is hilarious.
That's pretty funny.
Some of them are better than, you know, some of the posts are better than others.
Right.
But overall, I enjoy it quite a bit.
That's funny. That seems like the kind of thing that would is kind of perfect for a Twitter account, because you can like kind of spread it out over time, and you know.
Oh yeah, you're only expected to come up with one a week.
Right.
Like, there's no other work to really do in the meantime.
But at the same time, you know, it's like a pretty standard cadence, and, you know, you kind of get into a rhythm with it, I think.
Oh, so, I would imagine.
Yeah, so that's good. And the sort of thing you can fit in among your other responsibilities. So it's like a good Venn diagram of a Twitter account there. It's kind of like the, I don't think we, did we ever talk about Nihilist Arby's, that Twitter account?
No, I do not think that we talked about that one.
Oh, yeah. It's like the picture is like an Arby's sandwich, and it's like this incredibly like dark tweets about basically the pointlessness of life. And then it always ends with eat Arby's.
Well,
I wish I had some of those sweets handy, but
that's pretty goddamn funny.
Yeah, apparently
I would have to go towards that is less of a dad joke and more dark humor.
Right. That's a different Venn diagram of Twitter account, but the same way, in a similar kind of thing, I think. Like, but yeah, dad joke Han Solo @DadJokeHanSolo. That is a non-obvious Twitter account, I would say, Kevin. That's the kind of thing that the internet has to come up with. Like, that's pre-internet. I don't think someone would have come up with that one.
Yeah, and it was, you kind of mentioned that the article took a little more turn for it, or turn. It was kind of surprising that they tried to figure out when dad jokes first kind of started to be a thing, because it's definitely, because they were talking about I would say people that were at least slightly older than us to start the article, because their parents had passed already.
Mm-hmm.
So I mean, it's been a couple of generations at least that there's been something that people would call bad dad jokes,
right?
And they couldn't quite pinpoint when exactly bad dad jokes really did become a thing, though.
Well, I think they sort of have a general idea of how they came about, because at some point in the history of like the family relations, if you will, the dads were like cold and distant and usually at, you know, at work or the office and not really involved with the raising of the children. But then that sort of culture changed and it became more of like the dad coming home from work and like playing with the kids, and maybe the mom would be taking care of other stuff, you know.
Get in that kitchen. I'll take care of the kids now.
Right. Yeah. Basically. Or they would go play catch with them or, you know, do something fun. And so, like, the dad role kind of became a role of fun, you know. And that is kind of like the genesis of,
of jokes.
The dad jokes, yes.
You're having fun, time for jokes.
Right. But it was also interesting that, you know, they talked about this, maybe the potentially psychological reasons for the dad joke. And it, they seem to suggest that it's told less to make other people laugh than it is to somehow amuse the teller. Like, it's, I don't know. There is something about telling a dad joke that is kind of inherently funny to the person telling it.
Oh, yeah.
Like, beyond even, like, the funniness of the joke itself, I think.
Yeah, well,
like, the idea of a dad joke itself is kind of funny in some level.
Yeah, I think I know it's always going to float like a lead balloon. I'm like, oh, I know I'm going for this one.
Right.
Like, you kind of know that it's going to get the groan.
Right.
And like, that's kind of part of, even to the teller to me in this instance, since I do feel like I tell them, like, that's part of the appeal. Like, you are waiting on that groan. Exactly. Like, that is your approval.
Yes. That, it's a very particular thing.
It's counterintuitive, I guess, in some ways. Like, you're not getting the hearty laugh that most people would think of when you're going for a joke.
Right. But you are looking for that, like, almost pained response from your audience.
So, yeah, that ends up amusing you because it feels to be paining your audience.
But in a very particular way, I'd say. Like, like, not in a truly awful way.
And you're not being a complete Debbie Downer or anything like that. You're just kind of maybe stepping on one toe or something like that. Like, it's a nuisance, but it's not bad.
It's a hopefully endearing nuisance on some level. I think that's the goal. That's kind of the needle that you're trying to thread with a dad joke. Like, you fully recognize that this is, you know,
it's a little bit of a kamikaze mission in some way.
Yeah. And I think the idea that it's bad is in some ways part of the appeal. Like, it's almost like a movie that's so bad it's good, in a way. Like a truly...
Yeah.
Like a truly great dad joke, I guess.
Yeah, it's kind of cheesy.
Yes.
I guess is that would what I'd call a movie like that.
That's true.
So, yeah.
Dad jokes are definitely cheesy.
Yeah, dad jokes are definitely cheesy.
But somehow, some of them, I think, actually kind of own that cheesiness in a way. And, still work on their own level. And that's really, like I say, dad joke greatness, if you can pull that off.
Well, Ken, we have had our buddies, the Russians, pulling off all kinds of stuff recently.
Oh, man.
Well, I mean, we did have the Russians in the space station recently.
Oh, that's true.
The state apparatus over there was trying to cause a hubbub aboard the International Space Station while their comrades in the sky were completely okay with this. with the events that had happened on the station itself.
Yeah, and I don't think we've actually heard any follow-ups on that one, Kevin. I think that things may have quieted down a little bit since they were kind of running their mouths there.
Yeah, thank goodness. Well, the Russians, yet again, are influencing American cultural life, at least somewhat. It's a story that we did, Ken, about Star Wars and The Last Jedi, mm-hmm. and the number of people that do not like it. The number of people may have been amplified by... some Russian Twitter trolls.
That does seem to be the conclusion that this paper has reached by a research fellow at USC's Annenberg School for Communication and Journalism. So I guess they really only looked at the tweets that were directly at the director of Star Wars The Last Jedi, Rian Johnson. So... to be fair, this is not like an analysis of all people online who are talking about this movie.
Oh, right.
But just looking at the people who were tweeting at Rian Johnson, they found a lot of them directed either by Russian bots or people who are kind of just pushing a political message. And not necessarily talking about the movie, just about the
Hollywood in general.
The perceived like feminism or multicultural messages that they perceived there, and kind of pushing back against that basically. And very few of the tweets overall had to actually do with the movie itself necessarily, it being good or bad. So it's a totally unsurprising thing, I would say.
And it was kind of funny, though, that I saw this topic right after. I'm like, there is a wrestler that said he didn't like this. And I'm just like, it's still one of those ones where even if it was blown out of proportion, there are people that thought these kind of things. And I'm just like, I don't know what else you could ask for. Like, is it the Godfather? I guess not. But you're never going to get the Godfather out of a Star Wars movie, though.
Yeah.
I don't think.
Some of the stuff with, like, Benicio del Toro, like, I like that character. But, like, some of the stuff around that time... I felt like it's like that mission of theirs kind of something seemed kind of misshapen about it somehow. Like they could have cut different scenes or trying to switch things around a little bit there somehow to make things a little smoother.
Yeah. I mean, I think there's a difference between kind of going with that and like completely not liking the movie.
Right. I mean, there's little things like that, I think, that I could point to as it not being a perfect movie.
Oh, yeah.
You know.
Being Godfather level.
Yeah. Or, I don't even know. Maybe not if it's at Wizard of Oz level or not. That's an interesting question. But I would say maybe not Wizard of Oz level for me. But I still liked it a lot. Like, I have watched it twice now. And I think the second time I liked it more than the first time. So,
yeah, I've seen that one a couple of times. So, yeah, I guess even if the message of people wanting to or people really thinking that this was the worst thing ever, I'm not surprised that it got blown out of proportion by some bots of any nature.
Right, but I'm especially not surprised that this happened on Twitter, because it seems like Twitter is really behind the times on, like, dealing with these bots and things. I know, like, doing stuff for the web, recently Instagram and Facebook have really shut down, like, a lot of their access for, like, automated information gathering, like, even a public information.
Oh.
You need to be able to, like, have people authorized to even like be able to see their public information now on like Facebook or Instagram. But I feel like Twitter, like they make it very easy for you to set up like a bot on there. At least it has been that way in the past, and I don't think that they have done enough to change that. So I feel like Twitter's really dropping the ball here lately.
Yep. Well, Ken, I think at this point we will plug our Twitters.
Oh, sure. Might as well.
Because we kind of talked about the beer, but I guess we could go a little more into it. I believe it was Chayka was the, Chayka, Red Lager. It was only 4.3% alcohol. It's saying 5% in Untappd. I'm telling you what I saw at the brewery itself.
Getting some conflicting information here.
Yeah, I got some conflicting information. But, I have enjoyed... It was one of those things that I've tried to do. Well, A, I was hoping for more Oktoberfest beer, but their Oktoberfest beer comes out this weekend. So it was not available to be gotten. So I will say that. Because that is an excellent beer. But this is a nice place. Like I have enjoyed these lighter beers, these less hoppy beers. This summer I have intentionally tried to drink less hoppy beers, they've been really good, and I do kind of I don't mind saving my palate. I do still like hops, but it's nice getting out of the hop world every now and again.
I think doing that for the summertime especially makes a lot of sense, because they can be a little overpowering when the weather is hot and things are sticky out there.
Yeah, and the IPAs, especially the high-res ones, they make you a little dry in the mouth.
It's also bad when the weather's hot.
Yeah. So, this one, I have not seen it on tap previously. I have not. This will be the first time I check it in on Untappd, actually. So, it's pretty tasty. I mean, Actual puts out a quality beer more times than not. So, I'm really happy that it's between our places now, Ken.
And stop on by if you're out there in the area. It is nice. It's worth the experience to stop in. They've got a decent game room there, too, so it's kind of fun.
At DeFrango 11, at Gozer 33, the brand's at Stunt Granny. Rate and review us on iTunes, SoundCloud, or wherever you listen to us. And have a good night.
See you next week.